Welcome to The Sellout Show, the business show that answers the question, do business shows have to be boring? If you're a boots on the ground, phone in the hand salesperson, this show is for you. Chock full of actionable ideas to win more sales with snort your coffee out funny moments. No warmed over porridge allowed. Here are your hosts, Diana Guerin and Sean Carroll Sandy.
Welcome everyone to The Sellout Show. I'm Diana Guerin, the irreverent sales girl. We are always sold out.
And I'm Sean Carroll Sandy, Chief Revenue Officer of The Selling Agency, where we coach humans how to sell to other humans, because selling like jerks is just really so 2010.
So 2010.
And today's rundown, we have a lot of really fun things that we're going to talk about, or not. Hopefully we'll get there, but we're going to talk about some really pertinent sales training in prospecting. I call it push back and push through, and I want to get Diana's feedback on it because I think she's got a different take on this. And then also we have a sales fail, and we're going to combine this sales fail with a do-over and give our spin on that today too. And then Diana, what are you going to share?
We're going to do business travel tips. How do you keep your life working everywhere you are with business travel? And I'm so excited to hear from Sean Carroll Sandy because it always messes with me. So we're gonna hear some true tales from the road, and we have a little show and tell of a business travel hack that I love.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that. All right, well, let's jump in. So, you know, we talked about prospecting.
Yeah.
You do prospecting and I coach prospecting. And I think that if we could agree on this one thing, maybe we'll see if we agree. What I'm finding, and maybe you have a different perspective because this is not something that you do, but what I'm finding is that salespeople in general are woefully unprepared when they pick up the phone to call someone. So with many of my sales teams that we coach, I'm spending a lot of time talking about how do you quickly engage people? Like, what's that it factor in those first few seconds to connect with someone? And then the other thing that we're working on too is, you know, what happens when you get to those people who are just like, they're not really into it. They're just like, you know, I don't have time. I think that there's some really standard pushback and brush offs that people use that are just sort of, I think they're almost designed as a test to see if, is this person going to go away? Are they going to go away, or are they just going to continue bothering me, or are they going to show up with value or something like that? So recently, this past week, I did some what we call pushback training, meeting those common objections. But you know, in our pre-show conversation, you said you don't really get any of those. I was like, really? How do you do that?
Well, maybe I get them. They just don't look that way, and maybe they don't look like them to me. But I'm curious. So you said that you did a Jeopardy, like some kind of a Jeopardy show, training people on the. Tell me one of your good stories from your Jeopardy show while you were training. And I'm specifically interested in like the superstar comment that you didn't expect, and the real epic fail of like what was like so warmed over porridge or horrible that you just wanted to kind of take yourself out.
Well, it was Family Feud.
Family Feud, not Jeopardy. Yeah, right.
So to design training, you and I have both said in a lot of different sales training and stuff, to design training that is not just an absolute snooze, it really requires some creativity. And, you know, we get a little bit goofy sometimes. You know, I'm not making people do trust falls or anything like that. But just really trying to make experiences for people that they want to learn, they want to be engaged. And so I found this, I had this idea to do Family Feud. You know, the thing about Family Feud is that you have to come up with answers quickly, right? Now, I firmly believe that with preparation and practice, you know, you stop winging it, you become prepared, right? So with this, you answer quickly, just like you would on the phone. Whenever someone says, you know, I'm not interested, you need to figure out what you're going to say to respond to that pushback. So that was how we designed it, was I would read a question. How would you respond to this common pushback? And the salespeople would buzz in and give their answers. And then the table could play or they would pass. It worked out great. It was a lot of fun. So the four common pushbacks that we focused on were, I'm not interested. I don't have time. I'm already working with someone, and just send me some information, because these usually happen at the very beginning of the conversation. People say, you know, you get someone on the phone, you give them a chance to sort of give them your opening spiel, and this is why I'm valuable, so I want to have a conversation. If you can do that well, but they're still said, you know, I don't have time, you need to have a response. Like I said, I feel like it's almost a test. So I'll give you two sort of really fun responses. First, I'm going to say this is a group I've worked with a lot. And so some of the folks still gave some of the responses that you would expect. And this is what we were trying to get away from. So someone says, you know, I don't have time. We got an answer. Well, sir, I promise you, if you just took 5 minutes to listen to me, I would show you how I could give you back time. Well, it's meaningless. I mean, it's meaningless.
I'm not making fun of you. I'm just.
No, I know. And the
we
thing
don't is, do warmed over porridge on this show.
No. Anyway. Well, it's what everyone says and it's what everyone expects.
Right.
You've got, you know, there's a couple of different things that you have to keep in mind whenever you're getting pushback. You have to expect it. You know, this is not, you know, Joe Bob Jim's first sales call. You know, this is not the first time they've ever received a sales call from someone. And historically, their experience, Joe Bob Jim's experience, is going to be that person wants something from them, that they want them to help them sell to them, and that they could be even wasting their time, or that they haven't done their research, or they haven't done their due diligence before they picked up the phone and called. So Unfortunately, you know, many salespeople who have gone before us have set the precedent that they're going to waste time, right?
Nothing about presidents. I don't want to talk about the presidents.
Absolutely. Precedent. Yes, precedent. But salespeople, whenever they get that pushback, like, okay, thanks, bye. You know, oh, sorry to disturb you. Like, did you not expect that they were going to come up with something to say, to sort of stiff arm you? You know, no, sorry. Yeah, expect the pushback. They need to prepare for the pushback. You know, if you've done your job and you've got their attention, you're probably not going to get the pushback. But if you do, what are you going to respond and say? Oh, sorry, goodbye. No. So you've got to prepare for it and deliver value. Like, you know, I can't wait to dig in later on or another session about the 5 tips you have to really engage people. But you can't just show up asking for stuff. You've not earned the right to ask for anything. Show up and deliver some sort of value or prove that you're going to be valuable or that you know that you could be valuable in the conversation. And the last piece of that is disrupt their expectations. Like, no warmed over porridge. Disrupt what they expect from a sales phone call. So, you know, let me show you how I can give you back time, or, you know, there's a lot of that. And to much to the salespeople's credit, they've not thought beyond that. They've not thought about how could I disrupt the expectation from what the usual sales call's like.
Well, so let's do that. So Sean, you're calling me, ring, ring. So how do you disrupt my expectation? Like what does that look like in a call?
Well, first of all,
be on the spot.
First of all, I need to know, I have to have done some due diligence. You know, hey, is this Diana? Diana, are you the person who makes decisions about so-and-so? Well, that says that I've not done my homework, you know?
Well, and right away I've stopped listening. Exactly. I'm on my email. Yep.
Exactly. A lot of times I like to disrupt the expectation with empathy or a surprise conversation like, hey, Diana, it's Sean Sandy from the selling agency. I know it's close to lunchtime and you're probably thinking, oh gosh, if only I could eat that salad that I never get to eat at lunch today, or probably get ready to jump out and hit the Diet Coke machine and grab those Cheetos because you have 2 seconds for lunch or whatever. I mean, empathy can go a really long way, a really long way in connecting with people or disrupting their expectation. You know, instead of saying, hey, Diana, Sean Sandy, can I have 2 minutes of your time? It's empathize that you understand. I don't have time. I answered the phone, which is always a mistake, but I don't have time. You know, I've had.
I answer the phone?
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm talking to you now. Oh my God.
Yeah. So, but I'll show you just this one cheeky sales dude. He's really fun. He does a lot of prospecting. He's really worked a lot on how to get people to talk to him. And so, this was an answer to the question or to the pushback of when someone says, I'm not interested. So he said, hey, Diane, I'm Sean from the selling agency. He said, oh, you know, I'm not interested. So his pushback was, oh, hold on a second. Can you hear me okay? This is where editing is good. All right, hold on here. Let's come
the
on
connection
back.
Died. Oh, there we go. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, we'll edit that part out.
I know. Thank you, Tom.
So, try it again. So Sean, ring, ring, and I say, hello, Sean from the selling agency. This is Diana.
and so say, you know, say someone says, I'm not interested. Oh, cut you off. I'm not interested. Right. So the sales rep hit the buzzer and said, I'm not in a restaurant either.
Oh, God.
What?
Does this work?
He said it works great. And I said, okay, that's hilarious. But a third of the room, like only a third of the room understood what he had done.
That is so bad. Oh my God. Okay. So he's not in a restaurant. Okay. Well, that's one way to get through that. You know, okay.
He said, you'd be surprised at how creating this point of humor breaks down a wall so that you can have a further conversation. I said, okay, it's kind of cheesy, but it can't be gimmicky. Like, you've got to follow that up with some sort of great value in the conversation. And then another funny moment was we had talked really thoroughly about the response to just send me some information. And then there was the next question was, I'm not interested. Or the next section was, I'm not interested. And so following up, just send me some information. I said, how do you respond to the pushback of, I'm not interested? And one guy slammed the buzzer. He said, thank God, I thought you were going to ask me to send you some information.
Sometimes we just need to save our own souls on a call, don't we?
Absolutely. So I asked him if he'd tested that one, and he hadn't really tested that one. But, you know, the point is, try these. I don't care. Try these, but make sure that you've got some reason to keep people talking, something to offer them. You know, don't just give up when people push back. Expect it. They're going to. You know what? They're going to test you to see if you have anything further or have a real reason for calling them. What are your thoughts about pushbacks and brush offs?
Well, I mean, you know, I think one of the things that's going to make this show really fun is that we're not going to agree on every single point. So that's really cool. I don't expect people to push back with me. I kind of think in life you sort of get what you expect. So if they're, you know, I don't expect that people are going to push back with me, but you know, if I were going to sort of diagnose what's going on with people in this particular training that are, you know, dealing with some of those situations, that there's a few things at play here. The first one is they may not really actually have a good reason for calling on the person that they're calling on, and they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. Because when, you know, like if I have a good reason to call you, Sean, well, first of all, I have a feeling you'd pick up my call, right? It's like, oh my God, it's Diana calling, you know that we're invested in something similar, or blah, 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 right? So, right. So when I pick up the call to you, I don't expect you to give me a pushback. I feel like it's the same kind of way. Like, I know that when I pick up the phone call to call you, if I ever do, which I don't very often, but if I were to, you'd pick up and you'd talk to me because I have something of value to offer you and it comes through right away because you know that we're kind of interested in the same stuff. Right. So, but what that means is I know what your day is like. You know, there are a few things there. I know what your day is like. Mm-hmm. I know that I'm definitely interrupting you in the middle of something important, and you're an important person to me. And there's something that I want to convey. And if you can talk about it right now, that's fabulous. And if not, then we're going to figure out a time to talk about it together because it's important. And I think that when you deal with people that same way, understanding, you know, I love doing this. I was at the airport yesterday. We'll get into business travel in just a minute, but I love doing this when I'm at the airport. Every single person that walks by me or that I interact with, I make up that, you know, that's Brad Pitt or that's Angelina Jolie. How would I be with that person that I was walking by if it were them? Now, obviously, I'm not like, well, I think it would be rude to, like, you know, jump in Brad Pitt's face and say, oh my God, it's Brad Pitt. How are you? You know, so I don't do that with them. But, you know, there's an experience that I don't even know what it is, but people are always smiling at me at the airport and mm-hmm. really helpful to me because I'm relating to them as if they're somebody that's super duper important. And it's just a game I play to get better at sales, frankly. Because, you know, your whole thing is don't sell like robots, sell into humans. So back to your question. So I don't expect people to push me off because I'm calling for a reason and I know why I'm calling. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much know what I'm going to say. I mean, I think it's really important to have, talk tracks, or at least have a good sense of what it is that you're going to say. And do not ever read your talk track, but know what it is that you're going to say when you call someone. Have a good idea why. Another thing that I really like to do is I like to pull up their LinkedIn and be looking at their picture as I'm talking to them or leaving a message.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, so I get callbacks all the time on my messages, which is so unusual for people who are doing a lot of cold calling. But I think it's because I'm actually, sometimes I'll look at somebody's LinkedIn photo and I get really intimidated. You know, like they're the senior vice president of the world domination corporation, and and they've worked in all these incredibly sophisticated places, and I'm calling on him, and sometimes it's a real challenge, but I have to kind of get to the place where I like that person in the photo and not intimidated by him, or I don't even pick up the phone if I can't get past the place where I feel intimidated. I mean, it's just going to be a blowout for both of us if I do. So so I don't expect that they're going to push back on me.
But I think that's good to sort of, that'd be something I would definitely preface that training with, is getting people in the mindset. That's a great point. But I think this actually could roll into the next session, because what I'm hearing you say, I'm going to repeat what you said.
Very nice.
Okay, Diana. Is that you spend and invest a lot of time before you pick up the phone and call someone.
It doesn't have to be that long. If you're an emotionally intelligent person, you can take, 7.5 seconds and get a good feel for somebody on LinkedIn. Yeah.
But you do the work. Like, you do the pre-work. That's what I'm finding is not happening in a lot of different sales forces. So we have a feature on our show called the sales fail. Hashtag that stuff.
Hashtag sales fail.
Yes. And we're going to combine that with a section we call the do-over, because I want to pick this apart and talk about how we would do this over. I'm kind of surprised. I told you who this was. This company is a very, very well-known company, not only for the product they deliver, but also for the studies, the research, the insights that they put out too, right? And they are in the sales area, the sales arena. They partner with they're a partner with Salesforce, one of the most recognized sales application system, CRM and stuff on the globe. But so to have this particular experience was really sort of shocking, but not shocking to me. This is the second time today I got a call with a follow-up email from a rep from this company saying, actually, I'm going to read it to you. This is the voicemail. I'm going to read you the voicemail. He says, and it also hacks me off because it's a local number. I would have picked this up if I weren't on another call.
You hate that. You hate local presence.
Well, I mean, here's something sort of profound. The only reason I hate it is because every call I've gotten from it has been crappy. Mm. I wouldn't have answered the phone had it been a long distance number from someone I didn't know, but I did answer the phone and it was a crappy experience.
It feels like you got tricked.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. When you start the experience that way, it's never good.
So
here's the call. Hi, Sean. This is John. I'm from XYZ company. And he spells that XYZ company for me. We met at Sales Machine in New York at the event last year. And I'm just trying to get in touch with the person in charge of Salesforce integration and sales tools that the selling agency uses. So if that's you, or if you can point me in the right direction, please give me a call back at this number. Thanks.
There are like 15 things wrong with the first sentence.
Well, and so let's just go back to the beginning. This is the second week in a row that he's called me left a voicemail, as well as followed up with an email. Email says he's reading from a script. Because the email says the exact same thing that the voicemail says. And so this is the second week. So email, phone, this is the fourth touch. And he references meeting me, which I don't remember, at an event that happened almost 7 months ago.
I was there. That was last summer.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
So, couple things. If you met me, first of all, that we talked a little bit about this, the sales rep, the vendors at this event and the sales reps that were there, they're there scanning badges, they're giving out stuff. I did not feel like anyone actually wanted to have a conversation with me about what my business was or what I needed or if this would be applicable. They're just checking boxes, checking boxes, checking boxes. So that's disgraceful, in my opinion. If your company sends you to do a job, you know, they're just totally phoning it in. I felt that way about pretty much every vendor there. So one, do that part better and make an impression. If I met you, you sure did not make an impression on me. And second of all, it's 7 months later. Are you just now following up this leads list? I don't think anyone from this company has called me prior to this. Pretty sure they haven't. So why is it you're just following up on this now? That's crazy talk. Crazy talk. I've forgotten all about you. I've forgotten if I stopped at your booth or whatever. And the other things wrong with that are you didn't connect with me on LinkedIn. He's never looked at my profile on LinkedIn. He sure as crap has not looked at my business. There's three, possibly four people on my website that work in the selling agency. Who am I going to point you to?
Right.
Making this decision? No one. So it's very clear that, yeah, the second week in a row, he's just pushing a button, send an email, dialing, pushing button, dialing. It sucks.
Yeah, it does. That's a sucky experience. And it doesn't get, it's so funny that you brought up the name of the company, which we're not going to mention because we're not.
We're not going to shame you.
We're not. We probably should. Although what's really funny about that, Sean, is that same exact company, and I know this guy got promoted, which is a real problem. You're great salespeople. You always promote them way out of like where they're good. But he was the best sales experience I've had. I mean, I've written blogs about it. And it was a cold call, and he was fabulous. And we stayed in touch. I referred him to all sorts of places. I don't even know what to say about that. What a terrible experience. And it's such a waste of your time. It's such a waste of their time. But they feel like they got something done, and now they can report to their manager that they made this many touches and blah, blah, blah. And it was a suck on the economy. And that's bad.
Well, and what's interesting is that you and I had two wildly different experiences. Mm-hmm. If we talk about sales process and, you know, you're going to onboard and train your reps and have, you know, enablement tools back behind them. But what the heck, is this the norm, or is the person who called you, is he so extraordinarily good that he went rogue and did it on his own?
I don't know. He got promoted. He was probably their top producer and got promoted. Yeah, that's a mess. That's too bad.
What is? And this, it's the norm. I mean, it happens all the time. Very much so in SaaS stuff.
So what do you want to do with this? Do you want to do just a sales fail? Do you want to do over? What do you want to do with this piece?
What would you do over? So, you know, kind of marked out the ways he went wrong. What would you do over? How would you totally flip this?
Yeah. So, like I said, he made 10 mistakes in the first sentence, he made 10 mistakes. First of all, here's one thing that people need to know is nobody cares who you are or what company you're from until they know what it's about and if they're interested. They just don't. So with a voicemail, you've got this much real estate, you know, and the first piece of the real estate, this is the way I look at it. You know, this is just what I do. I don't know who as other people, I'm sure Grant Cardone does it completely differently than I do, but he's him and I'm me, and he has a plane and I don't, so you should listen to him. But so you have this limited amount of real estate. And if I call you up and I say, hi, Sean, everybody knows that you like to hear your name, right? You like to hear your name and you like to know that somebody's actually, you know, calling you. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, hi, Sean. I met you at Sales Machine in June. I know it's completely incredible that it's been 7 months since I talked to you. You probably don't even remember me. You know, you probably don't have to go that long on the real estate, but, you know, it's been a really long time since we spoke. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed meeting you. I want to circle back with you, and here's why. We have something really incredible that bloody blah, that's going to do this and this, you know, make blah, blah. And, oh, by the way, I'm calling from, ooh, I almost said the name of the company. And my name is Diana Guerin, and my phone number, and actually, usually on these messages, I leave my phone number before I leave my name. They do not care who you are or where you're from until they understand why it matters to them. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I'm making calls and when I'm designing my tracks, I always ask myself three things: what's in it for them, what's in it for me, because they want to know, like, what's in it. You're not calling out of the goodness of your heart, right? Probably. What's in it for me? They want to know that. What's in it for them? They want to know that. And what's the ask? And I think that if you can make that really straightforward, then that's all there is, you know? Mm-hmm. So whenever I leave a message, you know, I've got the person on my LinkedIn, they're a human over there. I kind of have a sense of who they are. I've dropped a look on their LinkedIn, which makes it much more likely that they're going to give me a call back, because now there's two touch points. You know, they've seen that I've dropped them a look on LinkedIn, and they see that I've called, and it may be my third or fourth message. I give up. I have a whole, we can talk about cadence and when you stop, but so I'm becoming a human to them in this conversation. I'm not doing a one shot, hope this goes well. And, you know, if I just spit out, hey, I'm Diana Guerin, and I'm calling from the Urban Sales Girl, and I met you, blah, 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 and who's the right person? I mean, they don't care who I am. They want to know what it means to them. So that's my little ramble.
Yeah.
So he used up all his real estate on stuff that the guy doesn't care about.
No.
You being the guy.
Yeah. I mean, me being the guy.
And they didn't acknowledge that it was 7 months later, which may occur. No. He's stupid. But as soon as you do, if I left a message and I said, I met you in June, and it's just stupid that I'm calling you 7 months later,
I totally respect that.
You know, maybe, you know, your life got as crazy as mine did, but it probably is time for us to connect because you were hilarious and I can't wait to talk to you. All of a sudden, I've got your interest. Mm-hmm. You might call me back.
Yeah. Or even if LinkedIn is great, but if you are calling a company, I would, please, dear Lord, go to their company website too to find out this.
Take a quick trip. You know, Google returns your search in 0.16 seconds.
Exactly. Because what he could have done was said, hi, I'm so-and-so from company XYZ. I know we met 7 months ago. You know what? I just checked out your website and I read this post and it blew me away. And I think that I have something that there's so much content on my website that you could talk to me about. Holy cow. I have the best email that someone sent me, and maybe we can dissect that later. I'm going to allude to it now. But what she did was she looked at me on LinkedIn and she used a subject line that referenced something from my bio, a really specific line. So I'm on the selling agent's website. Everyone who works here, you have to have 10 things about you, right?
Yep.
Is I've always liked to keep my boss kind of afraid of me. Kind of.
Sorry.
No, just keep the leverage in this corner.
Good. So,
the subject line was, my boss is scared of me too. Of course I'm going to open that email. Bam, right? And then the first line said, you know, my name might sound familiar because I've connected with you on LinkedIn. Right. So she gave, there's some immediate, you know, connectivity there. And then she said, I had to know who you were after you followed our company on Twitter, because we get so excited when notable sales coaches follow us. Like, wow. Flattery, rapport. I mean, boom. And then she got into her value proposition.
Mic drop.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the thing was, she had sent me a LinkedIn request, a very long, detailed sent some of these things, but not all of them, didn't use the subject line and stuff. And I thought, gosh, that's a great LinkedIn message. I meant to get back to her, but I didn't get back to her. I ran out of time. But right. She kept on. You know, so many times salespeople are like, oh, they didn't get back to me. They don't like me. They don't love me. People are busy, and maybe they just need to hear from you again. Like, oh, yeah, oh, I meant to get back to you. I hear that all the time. You know, I meant to get back with you. So she just went one extra step, and I totally appreciated that. But you know, there are things that you should be able to do to be able to personalize and relate with empathy and attach that to your value proposition, and give some context proof. There's a lot of different ways you can get people to answer, to respond to you, or to read your emails and talk to you on the phone. But same crap, different day. It's just not good.
And if you're anything like me, you are in love with your content. Oh my God. Yeah, you know, little dirty little secret. There are sometimes when I'll just go read my content over and over again. I love what I've written. Do you know what I mean? People are in love with what they created.
Absolutely.
It came out of their brain. They put their heart and soul into it. And if it looks like you even read it and even maybe liked anything, I mean, I'm yours. You know, if you're going to quote me, I'm yours. Yeah, that's. And with social media, it makes it so easy to make somebody feel famous, you know? Oh yeah. My God, you followed me on Twitter. I couldn't believe it. I la la la. You know, I mean, you'll do anything for that person. Who can I connect to it? Can
exactly.
I get references to other people that I know? You know, I'm like, yeah, it's just awesome. See, just what a great example of the do-over is perfect. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Good, good. All right. Well, I think there's plenty of, there's so much to learn about cold calling and prospecting. I think that was that was really good for our sales fail and our prospecting training all at one time.
Yeah. Tell me about you've got some travel coming up. You just got back in town and then you're leaving very quickly. You've got some travel coming up.
Oh Lord. Oh Lord. I swear. I was at a planning retreat for one of my clients. I have about 8 clients that I work with. And one of them, we get together at the beginning of every January. And we must have spent 14 hours on Saturday and another 8 yesterday. And then I'm on a plane. And then I leave, I leave tomorrow. And then I'm going from Florida to Winnipeg, Canada. So I'm going from like the 80s tropical Key West to -20 degrees. So there's a packing problem that I've got here too. But I'm just so curious on, how do you keep your life together? Like, and in the midst of this, I got my new phone, which I happen to love. Where is it? It's my Google Pixel, which I absolutely love. Anybody who, you know, watching the YouTube channel, send me little tips and tricks about your Google Pixel. But I love it. But as soon as you change technology, you're totally hosed, right? Yeah. So I got a meeting request over the weekend that I was traveling, and for today at 10 a.m. Central. And because I don't know how to work my phone yet, it doesn't get into my calendar. So fortunately, I was not the lead on this sales call because I would have been really F-U-C-T. But it's just, I just missed it. 10:15 rolls around and I'm like, seems like I'm supposed to be somewhere else right now. So I'm just so curious, you know, like how do you make everything work together? And, you know, do you out of office or not? Like, what's your trick about keeping it all together while you're traveling for business?
Oh gosh. I think preparation is just really key. Like,
yeah.
Let's throw in, you know, you have dogs, I have kids. Let's throw in all the preparation of other human or other life forms. And that makes things difficult. They're human, mine are humans, but I mean, you know, your dogs are like your babies too, right? So there's so much preparation that goes to leaving town and stuff. I think that that's really key. Making sure that, you know, everything is done well in advance. I calendar everything. I live and die by my calendar. So I'll even put the prep work that I have to do for leaving town into my calendar and make sure that that's all done. And then I, you know, I have a good support system too. So if, you know, my sweet, sweet husband, he's just a rock. So I'll make sure that before I go that the kids have everything they can do to make their lunches. And it's just really about the preparation so that I can totally focus and be in the moment when I'm gone and not have to worry about crap that's happening at home.
So out of office message or not out of office message?
Absolutely. I'll actually do out of office sometimes when I'm not traveling, but if I know that I've got a heavy client day, I'll put the out of office on because the last thing I really want to do is have to sift through another 100 emails that could have been a text message. You could have combined emails or it could have been a phone call or if it's really urgent, it's really helpful for people to know, don't expect a response right away. You know, and it varies. It really is going to vary depending on what you're selling and the access that people need to you. You know, when I sold print, I get calls at 8 o'clock at night because an order went sideways and they needed it the next day for training because they waited until the last minute to send the order in. And, you know, you're never on vacation in some industries, but for my clients, there's very rarely ever any sales consulting emergencies. And so I prep people ahead of time, but I usually, if I know that I'm not going to be able to get back to somebody within a day too, if I know that I'm in an all day retreat or a meeting or whatever, I'll put out of office on, because I think most people appreciate to know, don't expect a response when normally my response time is 4 hours or less. If that's the norm in the expectation you've set for people, then yeah. What do you do?
I don't know. I have some kind of like weird work ethic guilt. Like if somebody gets an out of office, then I'm somehow slacking or something. You're totally right. I mean, it bites me in the ass all the time. Cause you know, then you look like you're out of communication and you're a total jerk and it's terrible. And then things slip through the cracks and
yeah.
You know, it's terrible. I don't know what my problem is, but I feel somehow I've got mom guilt or something. I'm supposed to be somewhere. I'm supposed to be sitting at my desk. I'm just supposed to be sitting at my desk waiting for your email, and it's not okay for me to be out of office. Right? I am taking care of you. So here's my hack, though. Let me grab it. Okay. This is show and tell time. I love these. Have you seen these? They're called e-bags?
No. What is it?
OMG. Okay, so these are e-bags, and my adorable husband got them for me for Christmas. And they're just all these different size bags, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have mesh on them, and they zip up, and they have a little handle on them. And what you do is, I mean, I don't know about you, but do you ever have problems like when you're packing something, it gets all wrinkled or, you know, like...
Oh, yeah.
Out looking like nice, so I can put my, you know, my suit in there. And how I used to do it was Ziploc baggies, which actually serves a purpose if you have sort of a cloth baggage, because nothing like being out on the tarmac and getting soaking wet, and then you know your suit gets ruined. But so these will not help with that problem. But what's cool is, you know, they come in all different sizes. So you know, here are my tennies. You know, so I don't get like all the
dirt,
you know, and they fit like really neat. And then, you know, then you can have one for, you know, your, I don't know, socks and stuff or whatever, your makeup stuff. And then they fit into these nice little, you know, they fit together into your.
Yeah.
Like, and it looks like you've got your shit together, which you may or may not, but no one will know, because it looks like, you know, you've got this handled, and then you get to the hotel room. I don't know about you, but I always unpack when I get to the hotel room.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, you just put the, you know, the bag in the, you know, your gym clothes are in the one drawer, and you know, like that. And one of them becomes a laundry bag. And anyway, highly recommend e-bags.
I like that.
Yeah, and you look so cool. You know, like, you want people to see you open your bag.
I'm just going to say, how many people are standing in your room when you unzip your luggage?
Well, you know, on my little planning trip, I made everybody come look at my suitcase. Because they have this thing about me that I'm disorganized or something. And I was like, oh, well, just you and me. But they were actually right. I am disorganized. So that was my business travel hack, and absolutely loved it. Loved it. Loved it. Walk the talk. So what were you working on for your walk the talk last
week and the last time in walk the talk? So I was wanting to be more present. I had a lot of training coming up. I'm halfway through a heavy sort of first of the year training session, and all the preparation, I've got these great little worksheets and PowerPoints and stuff, but all that is for naught if you lose your people, right? If like there's something's happening, for instance, you know, last week there's a group, in this group, they're a big deal, like something happened and a corner turned for a big deal, and there were whispers and it kind of grew, and I was like, okay, let's just stop. Let's just address this, what's going on. So, you know, we got to have a group celebration, and my point was to try to really be present for the people that I'm training and coaching, to make sure that I can make adjustments and make sure that what I'm doing is really serving them for what they need there and in the moment. Yeah, all my preparation and stuff, that's great, but if it's not really hitting what they're feeling or you know, needing in the moment, it doesn't really serve them very well. So it went really well. Everyone was really engaged in the training in this particular instance where, you know, we had the interruption, but just keeping focusing on that was being in the moment. It was good.
Very good. Congratulations. As you already know, my walk the talk was it's time to start writing my content again. And my blog post goes up tomorrow about my, what it was like to plan for 2017, which I actually think is a really funny, hilarious post. So I highly recommend that everybody reads it.
I do too.
Yeah, for you saw it. So, you know, it's so much fun when you get back into the content, when you get back into writing it, but putting aside the time. So I will continue to ask you what I need to be doing, because I think I need to be doing, you know, less creation of lots of content and more repurposing of content that I've got.
Both. The answer's gonna be both.
But you're not posting four blog articles. You probably are. Are you doing four blog articles a week or something crazy like that?
Writing and sharing are two different things.
Yes.
But I will tell you, because of the volume of content that I've produced, I think since starting the selling agency, I think I'm in the close to 170 blogs on the website. All of it's evergreen content. So all that stuff is still good to share. So I share stuff that I wrote previously. When you build up that body and that volume, you know, that's very shareable. And the other thing that does is when you build up that volume of content is that when you encounter situations where this is appropriate, it can be a nurturing or a touch point. You know, for salespeople, we're talking about salespeople,
yeah,
the content that you create and or your company creates or that you share, those should be touch points to nurture. Today alone, after coaching sessions with this group of newbies, I've just boom, was able to send them content. Not a lot I haven't talked about. Why recreate that versus drawing on stuff that I've done in the past? But I will still continue to create new content, especially from all the wonderful sales messages and phone calls. That's just content for days to talk about that you get from other people. But yeah, so, you know, creating it and sharing it are definitely two different things. And the more you create, the more you can share. So I share a lot during the day, but I didn't write all that today.
Well, that's good. I mean, I've got, I don't know, probably 7 years. I mean, I used to blog every single day. So I've got probably like 400 articles and,
that's great.
And I'm just bored with them. So I don't put them out again, but it doesn't mean anybody else, nobody read them. Do you know what I mean? Or if they did, it was 5 years ago and they don't remember it. So well, that's good.
Well, you should do, Jamie, I can make this recommendation. You should do an asset analysis or intellectual property analysis. You know, what do I have? You know, what can I use? What do other people need to know in here? And every seller should do that. Every business owner should do that.
Cool. Okay. That's good. All right. What are you going to walk the walk? What are you going to walk the talk? Walk the walk, walk the talk with this week?
I'm really working on discipline. I think discipline is probably more of an art to it. And so, you know, I tell salespeople, you've got to be disciplined to do these things and make these calls and stuff. I'm struggling with discipline in my own life and in two specific places: to get up or to go to bed earlier and to get up, or to go to bed earlier, to get up earlier. I don't know why it's such a struggle. I am a night owl and I've conditioned myself to be a night owl. So I've got to figure out how to do that and to be disciplined, to be able to say, oh, bedtime, go do it. Let's just do it. So we can get up earlier and get more done during the day. I sure do not want to get up earlier.
Well, let me ask you a question, because my husband is a guy that is a night owl and he's just the most productive between like 10 and 2 in the morning. Is it really necessary, or do you just, I mean, are you fighting something and you really should just like roll with who you are and make the most of it, or is it really going to make a difference if you change that?
I will get up and do things that I don't do at night. Like at night, and those extra 2 hours at night, I'm not going to exercise. I'm not going to.
You're binge watching Netflix.
Yeah, I'm going
you're
to.
Well,
no, I probably would do those things, but I'm going to be, maybe I'll work on this thing. I'm not as those hours at night are not as productive as the hours in the morning could be. I know that.
Okay. So what are you going to do? What are you going to put in place this week that's going to have you go to bed earlier and get up earlier?
Well, I've done two things. So I moved my alarm clock
to the garage.
It's across the room now. And that's helped. I've done this for a couple of days now.
That is our sellout show episode for the week. Give yourself a high five for making yourself a smarter seller today. Then make sure to go to YouTube at the Sellout Show, where you can see Sean and Diana, and subscribe and see all the good stuff. Seriously, subscribe.
What's wrong with you? Subscribe. Come on.